Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to Midpoint. This is a very special Beauty Bonanza episode. I have Caroline Hirons, the best-selling skincare expert, as part one, and then Michael Douglas, the celebrity hairdresser, part two. I don't like the expression celebrity hairdresser, but when you include Kate Bush as one of your clients, it's difficult to label him as anything else. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to midlife hair. He's an incredibly knowledgeable bloke, and Caroline's not just perfect because of her no-nonsense advice, but also her life is brilliant. She, before the age of 40, was working in the beauty industry and selling skincare, selling makeup, talking to clients all the time, building up her knowledge, but also a loyal fan base because she just told people the truth. Then she started blogging, more truth, and then she was on YouTube and now her social media accounts that reach hundreds of thousands of people, and you may well have seen her on This Morning as well. It's a long episode. You might want to break it up into hair and then skincare, or skincare and then hair. And of course, Solgar are with us, supporting us as always with more than 300 products that bear the hallmark of the gold label, distributed in over 60 countries across the globe. Solgar is trusted by millions of consumers worldwide. Head over to their website, solgar.co.uk, use the code THEMIDPOINT and you'll get 30% off your order. Okay, we're going to start with the wonderful Caroline Hirons.
I've sent all of the messages to the family WhatsApp group saying, please do not come storming in the house, swearing or singing grime, because I'm literally in the kitchen. I can't. I've turned off the phone. I've turned off the alarms. I've told my mother, which, let's face it, means nothing.
No.
I have two brews, two bottles of water. I've got my notepad and my book and I'm ready.
Brilliant. Well, I don't know why you need your notepad. We all need our notepads talking to you.
No, because I always hear things and I think, oh my God, that was so brilliant. I should write that down.
Well, you hear stuff coming out of your brain, you mean? Stuff.
No, like your brain. Or I'll make a note and go, I should run that by Lisa.
I'm not sure I can make that claim. I just want to go, no, I want to start with you kind of going back to, is it right you didn't start kind of blogging, which seems like an old-fashioned word actually now, until you were kind of in your late 30s, early 40s?
Yeah, it was 2010. So I was literally 40, about to be 41. And Twitter had already started. I was one of the sort of early people on Twitter, not as early as like the Stephen Fry's of this world, but I was there. And yeah, and I was just, back in the day, as we would say, there was just a lot of chat on blogs about makeup and nails. And I just thought, well, first of all, why would you be interested in nails? I love getting them done, but it's not for me. And then the makeup I enjoyed, and ironically, Gabby, I am a trained makeup artist. You don't want me to do your smoky eye is what I always say. But I had just done skincare. So I would say, and people kept talking about, there was no skincare, no prep, nothing. And they're all friends of mine. And, you know, and I would say to them, what are you prepping with? And they'd go, oh, wipes. It was always wipes, you know, or I don't know, like the early Cetaphil, you know, just not great stuff. And so one of my friends eventually said, will you just put it on a blog and stop trying to tell everyone how to wash their face on Twitter? And that was literally my first post. I filmed it in the living room here. I've got my son to hold the camera while I kind of position my hands under a lamp, if you can believe. And it looks it now. And I've left it up just
posterity. Just
to, you know, look where we were. Look where we were. Yeah, and then it went from there. And I think if I hadn't have stayed to skincare and what I knew, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now. Because if I had gone down the road, there were people who were far better at makeup and nails. And God forbid it was fashion. I mean, please.
Where did the skin fascination come from then? Where did it start?
Well, my mum and my grandmother were both in the industry doing different things, funny enough. My grandmother was a fragrance expert. She sort of was taken to Paris by Guerlain and things like that. But downplayed it. Like I'd always be like, God, Nana smells amazing. And so now if I walk past a Guerlain counter, I try not to breathe because the memories are too much.
Oh.
The olfactory, you know, the olfactory system is set up to slice you down with no warning.
What kind of sense?
A whiff of Shalimar and I'm gone.
Oh, really? And so have you got a good nose? Do you kind of like...
Well, I can smell when my kids bring weed. I used to joke I had a nose like a bloodhound. But what I'm not good at is describing it.
Right.
So I follow people who are brilliant at fragrance and they really bring you into that world. Mm. So I know what I like. Mm. I know what I don't like. But I would just go, oh, it smells lovely. I mean, it's almost like I have no vocabulary. Whereas when you talk to me about the beauty industry or cleansing or spots or, you know, beauty backed or the, I mean, anything, sport, football.
So skin was kind of in the family, if you like, because beauty was in the family. And did you always have good skin? Were you blessed as a teenager with good
skin? Pretty much, yeah. I'd get the odd big hormonal zit, but my mum's deal was as soon as I said I want to buy some makeup, which obviously, like everyone our age, was a bourgeois blusher from Boots. colour rose. she said, well, you can only use makeup if you're going to learn how to wash your face properly. So right. That was like the best lesson ever. And I said, well, I know how to do that. I've been watching you and Nana do that since that's my earliest memories. Yeah. My earliest memories of my mother and grandmother, them washing their faces. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally. And so I did. And that was the trade off. And then I sort of obviously went off into a different direction, went down the pretended at one point I could be a goth. That didn't go well. You know, my mum, bless her, never interfered, but I think dyeing my hair black and crimping it almost sent her to the edge.
but like any good mum, you've got to just back off and let that phase go.
Oh, she totally backed off. You know, she would say things like, oh, it looks, yes, it looks nice, love. And I could see her afterwards, like, crossing herself, like, good she is, you know, letting me get on with it. And then eventually I'd go, mum, why did you let me look like that? I mean, goth doesn't go with my colouring. And she was like, I was never going to say no to you, Caroline.
So you started working in retail. Didn't you? That's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, what I did was I'd done all the usual sort of, you know, we call them bod around jobs. I'd been a secretary, I'd been a PA, I'd been a nanny. I mean, I'd done everything in my late teens and early 20s. And then when my second child, we have four, when my second child was younger, I said, I can get a weekend job now. You know, the boys are getting older. So I phoned a girlfriend of mine called Lorraine, who at the time was working for Aveda. And I had followed her to Aveda from Clarins. You know, in the old days, if you had a good rep, you would follow them around because obviously you'd think, well, they must know what they're doing. I'm going to follow them. And she said, well, actually, we've got a Saturday, Sunday job going here. And that was literally it. I was obsessed on day one. I was as happy doing that as you looked during the Olympics. Like, honestly, for someone who knows when someone is doing their passion, and we're a sporty family, so yeah. Obsessed. Well done. Job well done, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I went home and I said to myself, oh my God, I love this.
You found it. You had your...
I'd done other retail jobs. You know, I'd worked for Liberty. I'd worked for Harrods. Harrods in the haberdashery for Liberty. I mean, can you imagine buttons at stop count? Imagine. They have to give you a stool.
Oh, but honestly. I love haberdashery departments. They're just, it's so sad you don't see as many now.
Are there any anymore?
No, I mean, no? I tell you what I was looking for. I'm going to show you it now. I've got this beautiful trench coat and the buckle, like this, I'm showing the buckle now to Caroline. All the leather had come off and I was going online searching because I couldn't find them in a haberdashery store. I found, anyway, being the kind of, you know, kind of overorder that I am.
Resourceful.
I've ended up with about eight. And
You literally have eight.
Anyway, haberdashery. I could have worked in a haberdashery department. You, on the other hand, found your kind of home, your spiritual home is now in beauty and skincare. And you were very, very immediately, or at least it seemed that way, very honest with the customer. You didn't mess around with the customer.
Yeah, much to my financial detriment because, you know, if you're on commission in those days, we were on commission with Aveda and you could make a buck, you know. But then I very quickly realised, and that came from following my mum and my grandmother, you know, just being honest with people saying, you don't need that. Mm. Why would you buy that? Mm. It was just such a fun, brilliant time to work in retail. And I'm still, in my head, I'm a shop floor girl. And I really felt like I found my calling, which was unexpected because at no point did my mum or grandmother ever say, are you going to follow us into the business? Mm-hmm. It was as much of a surprise to them as it was to me.
So when did you start to get the science behind skin and understanding a bit more about skin kind of coming in then?
Pretty early on, to be honest, because I've always been, I like to call it healthily skeptical, mm-hmm. not cynical, just, well, if you say it does that, is it going to do that? You know? It's not that I started trying to question, but then what happened is, of course, with the onset of social media and the online world, people could make claims and it went unchallenged. Mm. Because if someone's standing in front of you, if I have a relationship with you and you're, by the way, I think I have served you in Richmond Space NK when you were still a Yoruth.
Wow, you probably did. I mean...
a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
Honestly, not to drop that in there, but you were on our list of nice customers, don't worry.
I love that shop. Anyway.
We would have such a ball, you know? And randomly, because it was so near Twickenham, like Glenn Close would walk in.
Yeah.
You'd just be like, oh my God. Anyway, I digress. I've completely forgotten what you said to me.
So we're talking about we're talking about the science of skin, and you because you were a bit skeptical of some products, and just healthily.
Actually, so I think it came from, because with Aveda they were very holistic before it was holistic, clean before it was clean, or green before it even existed. Mm. And they were genuine. So I met with Horst, who sadly is no longer with us, but he was the real innovator of Ayurvedic, sort of bringing it. Obviously, I don't mean in any way. What I mean is he brought it into the sort of Western mm-hmm, beauty world.
Mm-hmm. And the smells of their products. Oh, my God.
Honestly, just amazing. And I still have them in my head, you know. I genuinely was taken in by it, and I could see the effect that, and I knew the effect that scent would have on people from my own experience with it. But also, we were unfortunately opposite Vivienne Westwood's counter when they launched their fragrance, and even now I can't smell it without having a migraine. And it was it was brilliant times. I mean, my favorite moment in Harvey Nichols is when someone came up to me and asked me for the vagina West Wing counter. Excuse me, where's the vagina West Wing? And I went, I think you're Vivienne Westwood. It's just there, madam. Oh, yes, that
sounds like, it does sound ironically like a really good punk band, though. She'd be proud of that.
Vagina West Wing. I think Vivienne was off with that. But then what happened was I went to Space NK, and at Space NK, we were trained in every brand. In those days, you had proper hardcore, like 2-3 hour trainings with every brand, which is where my basic training came from in terms of the depth and breadth of brands. And of course, if you walk into a store like Space NK, and they still have the same setup, if you look on either the left or the right, depending on the store, you'll have high tech, doctor brands, that kind of thing. Then you'll have the hybrid area where you'll find like Yves Lom, that kind of thing. And then if you look to the other side, it's the green area. So you'll have like Tata Harper, that kind of thing. And although they've tried to amalgamate it a bit more these days, it's still very much that's how the customer used to shop, you know, left, middle, right. And so I would go to trainings and hear some trainings and think, oh, and that what would happen is, of course, the scientific and the doctor brands would bring the stats and would bring the facts and would bring the papers and be, and we found this when we did a clinical trial on X. But the woo-woo brands, as I call them, no, I have room for woo-woo. I just don't want you to tell me it's going to change the structure of my face, because it's not.
Right.
And when they said things like, and I won't name the brands because they do make the odd great product, but they would say things like, well, we don't let the women, if they're on their period, they're not allowed to pick our flowers in the field because it might bring a negative energy. That face you just did, lovely listener, if you could see Gabby Logan right now, that's the face I did in the training, because I have no poker face. No. So yes, the workers, if they're not allowed to pick our flowers if they're on their period because it may bring negative energy. And you could feel or every woman in the room went, mate, you've got no idea of the negative energy you're about to get.
Yeah.
You know? And so that kind of started. And that, I mean, that's over 20 years ago. So that it was already happening then.
Yeah.
And all that's happened now is just an extension of the woo-woo.
So you were not scared then to kind of say, hang on a minute, and call out a bit of BS
I wouldn't be rude in the training because obviously this person's giving up their time.
But you're not going to say that to the customer.
They're employed to do a job, but it would never get past my lips to a customer. And obviously what happens is when you're in management, you hire a team of people who are like you. We didn't have anyone in our team in Richmond that sold woo-woo. You know, if your customer base in Richmond is Jerry Hall, Jane Horrocks, Gabby Yorath, Dawn French, Glenn Close, these are people whose faces have to be on screen. They may need something to take down redness and they want something more comforting. Perfect. We can do that in the sort of lighter section. But if they wanted something that actually worked, we weren't on that. We were always in the sort of the doctor brands, the high tech brands, that kind of thing.
So your husband, I read a quote, and it might not be, you've probably heard it back to you a million times. It was something about you being gobby, making a living out of being gobby.
Who'd have thought that you could make a living out of being gobby and opinionated? Now, I took umbrage, if I may.
Well, I think he's naive. There's loads of us doing that.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Right.
But I think, you know, and that's actually, even though I repeated that, it was said with such sort of
Oh, like of course, love.
Fun.
Yeah, of course, fun. And love.
Because he's the first person, you know, when I was sort of working corporate, which I call the C word, I can't do it, Gabby. I can't do it. I itch. And it's the everything has to be a certain way. And there are people, I have brilliant, beautiful friends who do work in that arena and it suits them to the ground because they love the structure, they love the routine. I like being able to go, oh, actually, we could change our minds about that now, you know, but you can't do that. And I always describe it as, you know, big corporate for the beauty industry, for those listening, is if you walk into a John Lewis, for example, it's the big 5 or 6 brands that you always see there and you're going to know them immediately. Chanel, Clarins, Lancôme, Clinique, Estee Lauder, Dior, those ones. When you work there, those, you know, they plan their releases like 2-2.5 years out. So they're already on to like Christmas 2023, all that sort of stuff, spring releases, 24, you know, that's how far away they plan. And so they're like a massive, massive cargo liner going down the Suez Canal. Got to go carefully.
Yeah.
don't go for a second off drift or everything's going to come crumbling down around us. Whereas the younger, more innovative brands are like a speedboat.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see a trend, they can jump on it. They still have to go through all the testing course and everything, but they can change course and divert. And so that was always much more interesting to me. And so when I got to the point of management in Space NK, that's where I ended up meeting Sylvie Chantecaille. And meeting Sylvie Chantecaille is what eventually took me off the shop floor.
Yeah.
That's where everything that I had experienced previously, either working for corporate or watching my parents, who were both in management, watching how they treated people, clicked in. And I just thought, I love this. I love working with people. I love helping people. I love the educational side of things. And, you know, we're now in 2021. I think I've got 14 people on the team.
Wow.
That's really bad, isn't it, 14? But no one's left us yet.
That's brilliant.
No one leaves.
Yeah.
And we say, you're not allowed to leave. You know this. just because I have always, and that's why I couldn't do corporate, because you always come up against people's egos, everyone's clambering to climb up the ladder. And I just wasn't. I was just always perfectly happy doing my own thing.
You must have been, though, approached, and they must have tried to seduce you into their brands and to come up.
Yeah,
come on board.
I mean, I did go for a job at, I think it was P&G, which is fine. There's no problem with P&G. A long time ago, in between sort of when I finally decided to consult, and I got the job. It was like 3 2.5-hour interviews. And I've said this before, and it was when I first realised that I was in control of telling people my worth, which is life-changing when you're a mother at the time of 2 or 3 or 4, I can't remember. this is what it's like. But, you know, I went for the job, I got the job, and they sent me the offer, and I knew I got the job because obviously in those days it wasn't email, it was like a big fat pack arrived in the door.
Right, right.
Not the dismissive single sheet A4 letter folded into three. And I thought, oh my God, I've got the job. And I opened it up and the salary was like $8,000 less than they'd advertised and less than I was already on. So I called them and I said, oh, thank you so much. I've just got a query. You know, the salary is this. And they said, we've reduced the salary. This is, and they went straight corporate. And I got itchy and they said, we've reduced the salary because obviously we had to allow for the car. And I said, well, I didn't ask for a car and I don't drive. I live in central London. That's how long ago it was. And they said, well, that's the value we place on the role. And I said, well, thank you very much, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to decline because that's not the value I place on mine.
Wow.
And I remember saying it and going, you sounded like Oprah. That was good, Harvey. Do that one again. And then literally from that moment on, I thought, if I'm turning down this big job with P&G, which was like senior management, and no disrespect to them at all, they were very graceful. They got it. You know, and the people I spoke to said, it's our loss. And it was all very lovely.
How old were you then, Caroline?
2006.
Right.
So I was born in 69. What's the math? Late 30s.
You'd have been late 30s, which
late 30s.
That's, you know, that's a kind of interesting, it's a bold move in a way, isn't it? Because that's a time where you kind of think, well, my kids are a certain age. Oh, this would be quite a safe job in many ways.
Yeah.
And it's got that corporate structure. So,
yeah. But going back to Jim, which is why it popped into my head, he's always been the person to say, if you don't want to do it, don't do it.
Mm.
And I was the breadwinner at the time because that's what it was, because we definitely had Max by then. He was born in 2004. I was the main breadwinner. And when we had our fourth child, you know, four children in central London, the childcare fees, forget it. Mm. And so with Ava and Max, the second group, we had a group of two ones and then two others. The childcare fees were pretty much his salary. And we just looked at each other and said, why are we doing this? We're both busting our guts to get home. I'm constantly exhausted. Mm. The kids don't get any quality time with us. And he said, I'll stay home. And him staying home gave me the career and gave us the lifestyle that we have now.
But it wasn't, you know, there was not a given
wasn't
at that point, was it?
Days, no. And much more common now.
Hmm. But it also wasn't a given. You still had to then go out and create almost this career for yourself.
Oh, for sure. But what it meant was, for example, if the kids had chicken pox, it wasn't down to mum to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could say to the kids, oh, they've got chicken pox. Oh, well, who's with them? Their father.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The kind of question a man never gets asked.
And still ask that question
and
now.
Still. I mean, it's just, and even this conversation, although I am wholly appreciative of Jim and always sort of hold him up as I couldn't do it without him, you know, men aren't asked how they manage to do it with four kids.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
But I share it because you can do it. Mm. It is possible, you know, and I would have been successful, but I probably wouldn't have had my four
but
babies.
But I also think you sharing that helps to normalise that that can happen and it's not,
exactly.
You know, it's not
and,
extraordinary.
And most of my friends, especially in this industry, quite a few of them, their husbands have either gone part-time or given up to work with them because they're more successful, which is amazing. That's what we want. You know, it's not the 1950s.
Mm.
I don't remember my nana, my dad's mum, going to work, but she did but she would never work at the weekend. She was like a part-time shop girl in Liverpool, but my granddad was the worker, you know, and that's the generational gap. My mum worked full-time from as long as I can remember, because when I was younger, we were in the States. So over there, I think it was just a bit, you know, further ahead. And so, yeah, I just never had it in my mind that I wanted to have babies and not work.
We're very similar, actually, because I think we've both, both my mum and my grandma on the maternal side were, well, my mum still has a business now. She's a property developer, and at 71, she's as busy as ever. And her mum, my grandma, who sadly died just a month or so ago, she was the real kind of matriarch who always worked, had a cafe opposite Elland Road, worked all her life. So I think when you've had those examples in your life, you just then think, well, this is what I'm going to do. How are we going to make it work? But the funny thing was, my husband's, you know, it sounds a little bit like yours in the sense of always supportive, telling me to do things, go for it. He has his own business. I never thought for one second that I was going to stop working when we had children. But my granny, even though she worked all her life, she'd say things to him like, "You're amazing, Kenny.
I know.
You're incredible." She couldn't quite believe that, you know, there was this man who was sharing childcare.
Yeah, my mum would do that. And never from a malicious place, always just a wonderful,
genuine appreciation.
Isn't it wonderful that he's willing to stay home? I'm like, "Mummy, he's living the life of Riley." And obviously there comes a point where, you know, he was like, "I can't do this much longer. Thank God we only had four and not any more children, because I cannot do that school run anymore. The women weren't." And I remember seeing Danny Dyer talking about doing the school run, and it cracked me up, and I showed Jim and I said, "Oh, look, it's you." And he just said, do you know what I mean? I just want to get my little and get her in the motor and get home. Why are these women wanting to talk to me? Why are you talking to me? I don't want to talk to you. I just want to get my little.
Because he was such a novelty.
Literally. And so Jim would be like, "Oh, so-and-so wanted to talk to me, but I think they really want to talk to you." And I'm like, "Jim, trust me, they want to talk to you. You're the handsome man in the playground. You're the dad. Do the thing." And he's just like, "No, I'm just going to put my head down and tomorrow I'm going to wear a hoodie."
Is he interested at all in what you're doing in terms of the, and obviously the business side of it, but in terms of skincare, is he interested?
No. No, I mean, he'll say, "I need another pot of that stuff," and I know what he means. You know, so he's interested in terms of it's our company, for sure, and he has to sign the odd thing. But, you know, we did the big 3-day event recently, and he came for the party, and he was like, "Late." I'm like, "Dude, I'm about to give my speech. My husband isn't here. Hustle." And he's like, "Oh, it's just nice being out in Covent Garden." I'm like, "What are you doing? Get your ass around here, Irons." You know, and he struggles. And then, of course, he strolls in all like chilled, and I was like, "Jim." And I'm like, "Oh, great. Don't worry about me. It's all right. Can I do my speech now?" You know,
yeah, I love it.
And it's been great for the kids to see, because, you know, as early as they can remember, they've had a parent at home, which is obviously a luxury, but we weren't in that position because we had money. We were in that position because we had had four children. The nursery fees were bleeding us dry. And that meant I could then hustle in the word that we used to use in the old days, meaning graft, and really graft. And that's why I had to know my worth, because there was more than just, it wasn't about my ego. It was literally about my income. I can't take an $8,000 drop in income because you're going to give me a car that I don't need and can't drive.
Yeah. So in a way that was pivotal in the sense that you could have gone down a very different path if you'd taken that job, if they hadn't given you an $8,000 reduction.
Imagine.
And you also hit another zeitgeist, I guess, with your blogging and then the start of social media, because that gave you a platform to really be a specialist that was needed and trusted. Yeah. But getting trust and gaining trust doesn't just come by being there, does it? You know, you have to earn that from your followers.
No. And it's, you have to earn it. You have to own it as well. Like if you make a mistake, you have to own it. And, you know, I think, and I've said this before, but it was just the kind of viral storm that you could never duplicate, or everyone would do it. You know, I was older. At this point, I was qualified. I was a qualified facialist and, you know, could do treatments. I was extremely hooked up in the industry. So people in the industry trusted me. They knew I wasn't going to throw them under the bus. That came later. and you know, I spoke knowledgeably to the best of my ability at the time. You know, things change over the last sort of 15 years, but I would always be honest. And if people would say, "Is this going to fix my pigmentation?" I would say, "No, God, no. Is this going to fix my acne scarring? Well, how long have you had the acne scar? Is it still pink?" "No, they're from teenage years." "Then absolutely not. And anyone who's telling you otherwise is lying to you." And so that became my thing.
USP.
And it was never done aggressively. I mean, the odd time I had to be aggressive really was just with, it was almost like, if it was to me, I wasn't really that bothered. But if it was sort of trolls in comments attacking other readers, then I would go for them and block and all that sort of stuff. But
so is that bravery and that, I mean, I say bravery, but that honesty and that passion that you were able to actually verbalise, does that come with the age and the wisdom, or would you have been like that at 20? Do you think all those years of experience gave you the confidence to do that?
Yeah, I think so. And I think if I'd have been younger, I would have got myself into more trouble, because I was diagnosed with ADD at like 49 because I had to write a book and realised blogging is very, I'm not a writer. People are like, oh, you've written the best-selling British beauty brand. I'm like, no. I'm a blogger who wrote a book. I had a lot of content to hand. You know, I had half of it written. I just had to rewrite, update, and then do all the new sections. But when it came to rewriting sort of another 35,000 or so words that were fresh, I had complete, the page was blank. I mean, I couldn't start. And I now know that that's extremely typical. So my daughter had been diagnosed with ADHD from a tip-off at school. And we had joked when we were filling in the questionnaire that you have to do as parents. My husband and I were looking. He was just looking at me and I'm going, yeah, I know it's me. I know, to a T. I mean, it's literally me to a T. And so I went for the official diagnosis thinking, well, if I got some medication, maybe I could focus. Mm-hmm. But it was only as I looked into it, I thought, wow, I mean, without me even knowing, my ADD has completely directed the sort of
travel of your life. So the diagnosis didn't change anything really. It just helped you understand yourself a little bit better.
It really, really made me embrace who I am, which sounds strange because a lot of people get it and they have almost an anxiety crisis. And for me, it made all the light bulbs go on. Mm-hmm. I just thought, oh, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I gave myself a break. Mm-hmm. Where I'd always said, oh, you shouldn't have said that, or you're, because blurting is a part of it too, which I used to do in meetings. Mm. And not like negatively or badly, but you'd think, I would just keep my tongue and just be, well, they don't need to know my opinion on this, you know. You know, they say, oh, you can take too many risks, but if I didn't take risks, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in.
Right.
So it's that fine balance of...
Richard Bacon, the broadcaster, yeah, he was on a couple of series ago and he had a later life diagnosis and it helped him, first of all, understand himself because he goes into hyper modes of concentration where he can write kind of, you know, a TV show in 3 hours, but he wouldn't notice if literally the house had fallen down. And then on the flip side, you know, he could walk across the road and not notice a car coming. So he's like, or he can sit for days just not doing anything. Yeah. So
that's very typical. And that it explained my school years. It explained how I would cram for exams. Mm-hmm. And I feel kind of like our elder two sons, because basically the whole family have it. Imagine our house at Christmas time. It's entertaining. But I feel like if we'd known that early on, then our elder two would have had an easier ride through school. But it's not that they had a hard time. It's just that when you have it, you have no poker face. So I would sit through chemistry, physics and biology. Biology I loved and was obsessed with. Chemistry and physics, I would literally fall asleep, didn't even pretend to make an effort and say to the physics teacher, just keep walking, mate, just keep walking because you know I'm not, I can't even, my brain doesn't work that way. I can't retain the information. And our kids are the same. You know, Ben, our eldest, once filled in a report for English that they were so disturbed by the school, and it sounds terrible that we're laughing, but they sent it to us and said, we're concerned for Ben's mental health. And obviously we took it seriously, but we knew Ben, the young man, and he was just being honest, you know, and it said, and how did you find the assignment? So and he put, oh, I want to die. But he meant like, it was so boring, I want to die.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of it, they put, do you have any other notes? And he put, kill me now. We kept it. I mean, I still have it. I might read it out on his wedding day. But it really, all of those memories came flooding back. So it was thankful, you know, it was to our daughter who was incredibly sporty. Her netball teacher said, I think Ava has ADHD. She is so easily distracted, except when she's on the court. Mm-hmm. When she's on the court, she's a beast. Mm-hmm. But if I try and tell her something off the court, she's just looking at the wall and, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Ava being diagnosed led to me being diagnosed, which led to everyone else being diagnosed, which meant that we all now have a better understanding about it. We all take the mick out of each other constantly, you know. It also means the kids understand why my memory is so bad, you know, because they say, like, Mum, how can you not remember that? Like, they would be hurt. And I would think, oh, my God, I'm such a terrible mother. And now I think, oh, okay. And now I don't, because I don't do guilt.
No.
You know, I listen to your show with Cordia Winkleman and I think we're exact opposites. You know, when you were talking, I felt your pain when you said you got into bed and she hadn't taken her eye makeup off. And I thought, oh, I would have to wash her face. I really thought.
I actually stared at her for a while she was lying there thinking.
I would have said, Cordia, are you okay? Are you in a coma? Because would you like me to do it for you? I'll do it for you. And I know that's what she's like. And that's what I adore about her. I love everything about her. But we are complete opposites.
She was completely shocked that I was so shocked. Because I would have a face full of blocked pores.
My theory is Cordia must have, genetically, she must have a slightly oilier skin. I've never said this to her. I don't know, Cordia. I'd love to. But I think she must have a slightly oilier skin. Because if you abuse it in that way and you have my skin, you would not look as good as she does.
But let's talk about midlife skin, Caroline, because I've read your quotes about HRT and the state of your skin, and you can tell when women are on HRT. Can you skin? Can you really? Can you?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they don't want to punch you in the face. That's helpful. but yet, because they have just a bit more bounce and a bit more glow,
yeah.
because the estrogen is being replaced. The lack of estrogen in our body is, you know, to me, it's a medical crisis. The fact that Caroline Harris has now managed to sort of start getting Parliament to pay attention is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Through the work of everyone involved. But it's, you know, it skin aside, your mental health, the weight I piled on around my middle was just, I was like, what is happening to me? But yeah, estrogen and skin is key. And it's something we can't replace with a topical. So that's the other thing I sort of rage against, is stop telling people this will replace lost estrogen in your skin. No, it won't. Stop it.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'd say when I, it's about a year now since I started on hormones, and I'd say the skin was the first thing that I noticed, actually. Actually, not to lie, libido. But then...
libido, but then, mood, and then skin for me.
Skin was a really big improvement, because it was the skin that I'd actually noticed kind of could be a symptom, because I was like, why is my skin so dry? And why is it looking so lifeless? And I just, I don't, nothing I'm doing is helping. And and that was a big tick. Yeah,
it's life-changing, you know, and it's... People don't tend to go for HRT because their skin looks bad. They just think they're getting,
getting old. Yeah.
Yeah. I went because of the rage and the tiredness. I wanted to kill someone on a white van driver on Hammersmith Broadway. And then I realized it was actually my fault, but I still raged at him. Like it was his fault.
And what was that the moment?
Yeah. I said to my daughter, she was, obviously the kids were in the car because they're used to it. And I said, I think I might need some hormones. And she was just a typical teenager and just looked at me and went, you think? I was like, okay, thanks for that. I'll take that as a positive affirmation that I definitely need to go to the GP. And then, yeah, I did. But I was only, I think I was like 48. I left it too late. I should have been there 4 or 5 years earlier.
Yeah, well, I was 47. Sure. I'm 48 now. And we are there and we are talking about it so that people who might recognise other symptoms. So once you've got the hormones in you as a, you know, midlife woman, and your skincare regime kind of isn't necessarily going to have to change because of midlife, do you? Is there anything else that you're kind of doing to... to help your skin in midlife to look so glowy?
Yeah, I mean, I am a fan of the odd bit of an injectable. So basically, I'm blessed with both sides of the family. But it also became a big negative. So my mum's side of the family have high cheekbones. My dad's side of the family have really chubby cheeks. So I've always had big, fat, chubby cheeks. And of course, that's
good
the first
for aging.
That drops.
Yeah.
The first thing that drops. Oh,
right.
When
so
you're
it's,
older.
It's good for the fullness of the face,
yeah,
but also
then,
it drops.
But,
right.
but then it becomes a jowl. And so, and then I obviously, when I was sorted with the HRT and I sort of started taking care of myself a bit more and I lost weight, then I got more jowly. And so I went to a friend of mine and said, okay, your skin looks amazing and I know you have the odd tweak. What are you doing? And they said, I have a teeny bit of filler here and I don't really do the Botox. And I go like once, twice a year. It's just a tweak. You know, I think if someone says, oh, what have you had done? You look great. It's too much. Whereas if they say you look really well, it's like a good foundation. If you're wearing a good foundation and your skin is good, someone will say you look amazing. What you don't want is someone to say your makeup looks amazing.
Yeah.
You want to be wearing the makeup, not the other way around, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same with tweakment. So,
but what about a topical product though?
No, because the thing is, there comes a point where a topical will only do so much and you need, you know, the gold standard is vitamin A. So a retinoid. A retinoid is, you know, a girl's best friend or a boy's best friend, but it's particularly a girl's best friend because it will help. It does help to sort of regenerate, and I use that word lightly, not in a medical term, obviously. But the main thing that we all could have done, and I don't know if you did it, but the thing we all could have done is take a leaf out of Claudia's book and fake tan and not bake in the sun in the 80s.
Yeah, well, I have to say I am a fake tan fan. I'm not as perhaps don't do it as much as Claudia, who I think by her own admission,
as
likes
she said,
to.
I just want to look like I've rolled in orange and come out of skin.
But because I'm not a I'm not blessed with a skin that tans, I kind of stopped bothering about it at quite a young age, which I'm grateful for now.
Probably why you've got phenomenal skin.
But I think I used a lot of sunblock because I just didn't go brown. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just was kind of whereas. My sister's got really olive skin, so
she went brown.
But then you know a point where you just go, I'm just getting redder.
I don't care.
I'm just getting redder.
Yeah.
I think younger generations now are much more on that, aren't they?
They are, but they're still not keen on SPF, especially in this weather. And it doesn't help that, like, you know, the nice guidelines for the NHS and the kind of those kind of rules, they haven't really updated. So they say, oh, if the UV factor is low, you don't need to wear an SPF. That might be for UVB, but UVA still shines through, and that's what causes your aging. So my big thing with my with my kids is just use your SPF, because when you get to my age, you won't have to fix pigmentation damage and things like that, you know?
So even midlife women should also still be thinking about, I mean, it's not too late. It's never too late to start with your SPF.
No, or just a general routine, you know, if they think, I don't even know what to do, and, you know, wash your face properly. You know, acid is fantastic for an older skin, but you don't have to go in hard, you know, and I'm sure your mum would say the same thing, being a beautician, you know, you have to sort of help your skin shed the layer. It's no different to body brushing. You know, it's just milder. And then things like there's a whole array of, you know, serums that are helpful if you are slightly older. But the key words for me, if you're sort of thinking, if you're my age and you're looking, I'm 52, and you're looking at things like ceramides and, you know, peptides and things that are actually not invasive. They'll support your barrier. And the main thing is, if you go too hard in your barrier function, especially if you're menopausal, if you over-treat your skin, if you say, like, I'm going to do an acid, then I'm going to do a niacinamide, then I'm going to have a peel, then I'm going to do some microneedling. If you do it all and your skin can't cope with it, which is what happens to all of us when we're menopausal, because we're so slow to repair. Everything's slow to heal. You'll know if you get an injury, it takes ages to recover from it.
Or a cut or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, that, I mean, for example, you can take zinc to help with that, but that doesn't help you on the surface of your skin. So I always say just slow down with the actives. Build up your barrier, which is just using, you know, you can do it easily with a good solid moisturizer and an SPF. And within a week or two, your skin should be back to normal. And then you can look at the kind of actives that you want to use.
And you've always been very strong on, you don't necessarily have to spend top dollar to get these products. There are products out there. People can, and you promote that obviously through your social media.
But you do have to spend.
But not hundreds and hundreds of pounds on one product.
No. If you're doing that, you're paying for the designer's house. I would say you can get most of the things you want in the mid price mark, which for me has always been sort of 20 to 25 upwards. I don't think I would ever go, one of my favourite moisturisers is 127, but that's Kate Somerville, and it's very targeted for like peptides and my age group. But certainly if you're younger, absolutely not. A good cleanser, a good moisturiser, a good SPF will see you right for years and years and years. Assuming your lifestyle isn't that, you know, you're not wrecking your face. and smoking and drinking and partying and all that
and
sort of stuff.
And diet and obviously is a factor. Supplements and diet are a factor in terms of the skin. How much weight do you put on diet on the skin?
Well, I'm always wary of, you know, I'm asked all the time about collagen powders and things like that, and as most of my dietitian and nutritionist friends will say, is when you ingest a collagen powder, the stomach doesn't go, oh, remember lads, she wants this in her face. You know, it will be used elsewhere. It will go to your hair, your nails, you know. So,
which is no bad thing.
No bad thing. But I think selling people the sort of myth that you can replace lost collagen is just not really, I try and stay away from it. You know, I do take supplements, and obviously I take my HRT, and I love a bit of magnesium, especially in the evening if I want to relax and
magic.
muscle
magic.
Aches and things like that. But I'm not... I would never sort of fully endorse ingesting collagen until there's more clinicals, just because there's so many sort of things where they sort of try and make you think it's going to end up on your skin. The best thing I ever did was stop drinking. You know, I still like the odd glass of champagne. But when you're menopausal, your liver just cannot cope with alcohol in the same way it did when you were 20. I mean, I used to work in HMV back in the day in the 80s. We'd go to work, go to a gig, full makeup, you know, go to the after show party that would go on all night, like at Wembley Arena or whatever, and then go back to work the next day. I would be in bed for a week if I tried to do that now.
So it's not necessarily for your skin that you stopped. It's more for just not being able to get up in the morning
general
and work.
Well-being. Yeah. And every...
But you've noticed it on your skin.
Completely. And every gynecologist and OBGYN and Dr. Jen Gunter's, she's kind of the US version of Dr. Louise Newson, but she's...
Right.
Louder. And she is the one who went to the Goop Summit and basically called it out and was just like, this is bullshit.
Right. Okay.
Don't steam your vagina. It's a self-cleaning oven.
Right.
Like that kind of thing.
Well, speaking of that, and I wasn't going to bring it up necessarily, but you obviously attracted a bit of attention when you called out Gwyneth Paltrow's SPF application.
Or lack
you?
Of.
Lack of SPF application. And I was wondering, because it's so important to be able to do that. People don't necessarily feel they have a voice. I suppose I've asked you the question almost already, but that confidence and that ability to say, right, this isn't right, that comes with age, doesn't it? You wouldn't do that at 20. I'm just looking at the positives of being in midlife, and I think that is definitely one of them.
Yeah. It's all positive for me. I mean, the only thing that isn't positive is, like Billy Connolly used to joke, is that you grunt when you go to unplug something. You know, you know, that's the only, that and sort of needing more sleep, you know, that kind of thing. But the positives, I mean, I wouldn't be 20 again if you paid me, Gabby. I love being 52. And also, you know, you get to see your, if you're lucky and if that's what you, the path you choose to take, we chose to have children, you know, you get to see your children grow and we have a granddaughter. And,
yeah. And well, I was going to ask you that. Yeah, being a grandma, I mean, looking as glamorous as you do, but being, you're so lucky to be, I say this without, hopefully my daughter won't do anything too proactive about
not,
this.
Not
she's 16. But yeah, I often say to her, you know, there's other ways to have families. You could have family in your 20s and early 20s, because I think it's a real gift, isn't it?
Oh, it's just been the absolute best thing. Yeah, I mean, when people say 2020 was horrible, I'm like, no, that's when we had Nova. It will never be, you shall never hear me say 2020 was an awful year. It was the best year of our lives. She is amazing. But I love being the age that I am. I just want to make sure that the women who are our age have the right information. And with the Gwyneth situation, it wasn't even a red flag to a bull. It was almost as if the bull was standing in front of the matador and the matador was butt naked with food hanging from his balls, waiting for the ball. I mean, it was literally like, you are absolutely kidding me. And the fact that Vogue US had given it the platform just made my head explode. Because to them, it's just, they're going to get hits, right? It's clickbait. Mm-hmm. Gwyneth's daytime routine. Well, first of all, she makes out like she's washing her face, but she's got makeup on. So mm-hmm. the whole thing from the beginning to end is just a Hollywood lie. And I can't deal with it. It does my head in. And where I would normally just ignore it and go, oh, God, California, and make a brew, when she did the SPF, I was like waiting for her to finish. I was just like, what are you doing? She said, well, I'm not a big user of SPF. I like to just apply it where the sun hits. And I'm like, and she's mimicking, like doing it like a cheekbone highlighter. And I'm like, what do you mean where the sun hits? You live in California. It hits everywhere. And, you know, and I don't mean it in an unkind way, but her chest and her neck are full of sun damage. So she's clearly never worn SPF. Is not comfortable wearing SPF and just did it because she felt like she had to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if that was me, I would just do a nighttime routine. Babes, just do a nighttime routine.
Yeah.
You know, get a better advisor who says, you know, if you don't use SPF, people will say, why aren't you using it? Better than just making up. And also she said that normal SPFs were toxic, which really wound me up. And so, yeah, I just said, this is really bad information. And then what happened was I didn't even plan it. I just said, this is really bad information. What are you doing? But then every science or dermatologist or esthetician that followed me started DMing me on Instagram saying, well done, it's outrageous. And that's when I lost it. I was like, why? Why is it always me saying it? And you're all saying it. Why don't? And I was clapping my hands. Why aren't you saying it too? If you're a dermatologist and you let this fly, especially in the USA, then shame on you. And then they all responded, thank God. But yeah, I did lose it a bit. And to be fair, I watched one of those back because someone asked me about it. And I said in one of the lives, like the day before, that I hadn't had any HRT for a week. And I think you can tell. I think I've been slow to order it. And I think I'd run out. And I think you can tell. But I'm glad because, frankly, it needed saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't always want to be that person, Gabby. I too, again, like Claudia or Charlene Pateri, you know, who, by the way, I have such a girl crush on. I was loving listening to her talking. Because when she first came out, I was like, oh, my God, you don't have to basically...
have
show
long
your nipples,
have long curly hair and wear a crop top and have a.
And you well, just she was, knew that she swore and you know her hair was amazing and she was playing guitar and you know
she's
but
brilliant.
I just don't. They're right in that I'm just at the age where I just don't give a you know bleep word in terms of upsetting. Gwyneth Paltrow hasn't got to be upset by me. I'm sure she hasn't even seen it to this day. Why would she care? But the people who are tagging me in it. You know, my readers who are tagging me in it saying, are you going to, do you think this is right? I was like, God, no, it's not right. That's why I responded.
Yeah, because I think it's your credibility with your followers and the people who take your advice is important, isn't it? As you say, her empire is going to keep going. But
Vogue don't care what I say.
But well, they probably do actually. But and they might think again next time when they put stuff up that's not credible. But I think it is, you know, having that attitude, as you say, and it is an attitude. It's a great attitude because people... I trust you. And, you know, that's what it's all about. So
it's just very much, what are you doing? Put it all over your face.
So you've given us some very good takeaways there. I didn't want to spend like the hour chatting to you about all the things that we should be doing in midlife. You've been drinking water during the interview as well. Tick. And and clearly your skin's glowing as well. So you practice what you preach because you must get sent so much stuff. It must be so tempting to just kind of, you know, be trying stuff out all the time. But you stick with the stuff you know and what you like. And then
yeah, I mean, I try things and my team try things for me. And I'm always interested if something's new and scientific, for sure. I'm just not that easily swayed by claims unless they're backed up with science. That's it, really, you know? I just don't like the disingenuous side.
Thank the Lord for you, Caroline. Thank you so much for sharing it, for giving us your time and your passion.
Thank you for having me.
You you can get the noisy kids back in.
I'm going to put the kettle on, leave them.
Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Gabby.
Michael Douglas, it's wonderful to have you on Midpoint. I feel you're in a very special place as a male hairdresser to come on and talk about hair in midlife, and partly to do with your girlfriend, the wonderful Davina McCall, who, as we know, has been an amazing pioneer in the HRT revolution. You have a podcast with her as well, don't you?
Yes, it's called Making the Cut, and we do that once a week. It's quite good fun. It's a bit like therapy for the pair of us. We just basically talk to each other for an hour. Afterwards, we both feel like we've
had a session with a therapist.
Yeah. It's quite helpful.
Well, that's how people feel often about their hairdressers, don't they? You could probably write a book, actually, Michael. Yeah. That's what you should be doing as well. So has your clientele, as you've got older, has your clientele kind of grown with you? Are you now, do you think, an expert in the midlife woman's hair?
So, yes, all my clients. So, like, I look after Dawn French, Kate Bush, obviously Davina McCall, and then lots of other people over the years, like Kylie Minogue and her sister Danny, or Claudia Winkleman, or people like that. So, yeah, they've all reached this age where they're all going through this kind of midlife stage as well. So it's a hot topic that I never stop talking about or listening about.
Perfectly put at ease. Anybody listening to this, your credentials and, you know, your qualifications to talk about midlife hair, there is absolutely no doubt you are the man. But the hair kind of topic with women, it really does change, doesn't it, when you hit a certain age? The texture of the hair, people find themselves losing hair. So what's going on with the midlife hair and genetic code?
You're restricted by your genes, essentially. And I think a lot of people think they've got fine hair genetically, that they can make it thicker. And sadly, you can't really. Like, I'd love to be taller. I'm never going to be taller, in the same way that some people's hair is never going to be different than it is. What you want, really, is to get to a stage where your hair is the best it can possibly be for you, right? So it's at the absolute maximum end of your genes. Sadly, as you get older, you know, the cell production and things like that of producing new skin and new hair starts to get worse and worse. I did read this thing in a scientific paper about how that works, is that the cell gets reproduced off the previous production of its cells. So a bit like a photocopy. So the first time it gets photocopied, it's great. But when you photocopy the photocopy and then photocopy that photocopy, that's essentially how you age.
What a great analogy.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
But your cells get a reproduction of the previous cell, but not the original cell, you know. So your hair does start to deteriorate because the follicle that produces it just starts to get older. It stops producing colour, so you start to go grey, and then it can start to produce thinner and thinner hair. The problems for women, really, in particular, is the fluctuation of hormones. So you've got it at puberty, first of all. Then you're roughly going to have babies at some point, let's say that the vast majority of women are. That's a bit, you know, there's an enormous fluctuation of hormones there, where you store a lot of stuff, and then after you've had a baby, there's a huge drop in oestrogen. That has a huge effect on your hair. And then obviously the menopause as well, there's a tail off of estrogen and progesterone. And all these things basically have an enormous impact on how well you grow hair. So to break it down in simple terms, the hair grows through four phases. But to keep it simple, you go through a growing phase and a shedding phase. About 90% of your hair is in a growing phase, and about 10% of it's in a shedding phase. And that's when you run your fingers through your hair and pull out some strands of hair.
Or when you brush it and you take loads of hair off your hairbrush.
Or you see it all in the shower, right? Now, Mark Blake, the trichologist, texted me yesterday and said, did you know October is the worst month of the year for seasonal hair loss? So more people are losing hair at the moment than at any other time of the year. The best month for hair loss, as in it's far less, is January. So you've not got long to go until that cycle starts to work its way out.
Can I just pause you there for a second? Because that's a nightmare. Our hair's being lost as we head into party season. And then as we're staying in and having dry January, we've got this great head of hair. Sorry, but Mother Nature got that one all wrong.
It's got so many things wrong. It's driving mad, Mother Nature. So yes, there's this drop in estrogen and progesterone. And what that means is the growing phase slows down. So that 90% of growing phase turns into about 60%, and then you get 40% going into the shedding phase. And that's what people are terrified of. They put their fingers through the hair, they're pulling out clumps of hair, it's falling out left, right and centre. And basically, the slowing down of the growing phase is a mixture of things. It's largely related to hormones, but it's also related to health and diet. People don't eat properly. You know, it's like, we're so bloody busy trying to do everything we're meant to do that people just aren't eating enough protein. Protein's the single best thing you can eat to grow healthy hair. So there's other things you can put in your diet as well, like iron and collagen and stuff like that. But your hair is on a very low down a priority list for the nutrients that you take into your body. So you stuck a lot of stuff into your body, and it goes to your muscles, it goes to your bones, your teeth, your eyes, your skin, and all the rest of it. And at the end, stuff goes to your hair. But if you're not eating enough protein, if you're only eating 50 grams, all that 50 grams is being used up everywhere else other than your hair. So it's those things combined. So let's say you've got the menopause, you're going through a shedding phase, you're not on HRT, and you've got a virus like long COVID or something like that, and your diet's not that great. Blimey, you know, your hair is going to be suffering like nobody's business. So sort the diet out first, maybe go and see a doctor about HRT, because the other thing that happens when you drop estrogen and progesterone is that the male hormone that women have in their body starts to become more prevalent, because it's kind of suppressed by estrogen and progesterone. So when that stops, that male hormone starts to kick in a bit. And one of the things it does is shrink the follicle. You will grow hair, but it'd be finer than it was before. So going on HRT reverses that whole system. Now, it takes a while because hair grows quite slowly. So people want instant results. They want to take some collagen and in 2 weeks' time have loads of hair. Or they want to take HRT and see the difference. You've got to give it at least 4 to 6 months to start to see an impact on that, because your hair grows a centimetre a month, right? So if it grows through for a month or two months or 3 months, you've got to give it at least 3 or 4 months to start to see any benefit at all. People give up quite quickly with hair supplements and things like that, but stick at it. 3 to 6 months as you're looking at for it to recover.
That's a really good point, actually, because it's not going to change the hair that's already out, obviously. Yeah. It's the hair that's coming through. What has changed, which I don't know if I can do anything about, is I've got naturally curly hair, right? And it's getting more coarse as it comes through. It's wavy, right? So that's kind of like not going to change. There's nothing I can put in my diet to create straight hair, basically,
or smoother hair. I mean, heat is really great at smoothing out that hair, but obviously it's a bit damaging. It depends how you do it. A lot of people straighten the hair. So they get the irons, they put it in, and then they iron 3 or 4 times over one section. You don't need to do that. You just do it once, slowly, over one section at a time.
Right.
So you're not just putting endless amounts of heat on the hair.
And products beforehand?
Yes. If you can get some kind of heat protection cream or blow dry spray. My favourite is this one from Sebastian. It's called Potion 9. It's kind of a funny orangey kind of, it's like mango juice or something like that. It's quite syrupy, but it's brilliant. You put on wet hair, blow dry that in until your hair's completely dry. Completely dry. The worst thing you can do is put like 200 degrees centigrade on damp hair. And people do this all the time. It's the single most damaging. It's more damaging than bleach and everything else to your hair. So make sure your hair is bone dry with a product on and then iron over the top of that. But one of the things that people do is they iron way too much. So your hair's got some moisture in it. When you take that moisture out, hair gets styled. That's how hair is styled. You don't need products to style hair. It's just the removing of moisture from the hair. So you can wrap your hair around anything, remove the moisture from it, and it'll stay a perfect representation of whatever's been wrapped down. You don't need mousse or blow dry spray. All the stuff goes on in the centre of there. But if you start trying to remove moisture that's not there, you're just burning your hair, and that's what loads and loads of people are doing. So you can straighten those tight, frizzy, curly bits of your hair with some little straightening irons or something like that, but just do it once. With some product on the hair and do it slowly. It should take maybe 4 or 5 seconds to go down the section of hair. But that's it, once. And then don't touch the hair until it's cold. So there's something the hair goes through. Right. It's called a glass transition phase. And a lot of people put a curl in the hair and then run their fingers through it quite quickly. Don't do that. Put the curl in, let it go cold, and then put your fingers through. The curl sets, it lasts loads longer because it goes through this glass transition phase of cooling down.
That is great advice. And I've never heard that. What I also want to do, because we've talked about condition, we've talked about how hormones affect hair, we've talked about how to look after your hair better as you're getting into that period of life, but style. Because there used to be this thing, didn't there? Kind of like, oh, you have to cut your hair when you get to a certain age. I don't feel that's a thing anymore.
No, and it definitely shouldn't be. But, you know, I do this Instagram live thing about once a week. But the amount of people that do say, am I too old for this or am I too old for that? And I always think, what kind of question is that? No is the answer. Like, you're not too old for anything. I have a client called Anne Mitchell, an actress who was in EastEnders for a long time, and she very famously played this character called Dolly Rawlins in a series called Widows in the 80s. Everybody remembers her from that. I think she's 83, Anne Mitchell.
She's not.
Yeah. I highlight her hair like I would highlight a 22-year-old's hair. Like, there's no difference in the way I do her hair than I do anyone else's hair. We do some weaved highlights, some bleach, some blonde, We do this lovely kind of shaggy kind of hairdo with a big long sweepy fringe. I blow dry it in exactly the same way. And she's like a shining beacon for me to say, look at this woman who's 80. Like, I don't do her hair any differently than I would do a teenager's hair. Like, no, don't pay any attention to that. What you want is to just look the best possible version of you. So, no, I don't buy into any of that, really. And I often find, you know, short hair can sometimes emphasise ageing. And I don't know whether that's a generational thing for us.
I think it depends on the face, doesn't it? I was at an event last night and a woman who must have been in her mid-50s, because she came over to me and said she enjoyed this podcast. She said, I'm a little bit older than your target. Mm-hmm. She didn't look it. She looked really, she looked great. She had a cropped black, very dark hair, kind of like in a really like Liza Minnelli almost, kind of like beautiful cut. And it suited her face exquisitely. You know, she had a red lip on, really dramatic bone structure. And I looked at her and I thought, God, I bet that's easy to look after. And I was like looking at thinking, oh, I love, but I could never have that haircut. And I think it is your face, isn't it? And your hair texture is going to kind of direct you in that. But in terms of a blanket rule.
Yeah, I mean, I never look at face shapes. Lots of people say to me, oh, I've got a face shape. What would be good for it? In 35 years of doing hair, I've never thought about face shapes at all. It's not part of the thing. Journalists write about them all the time because I think they've got to fill the magazines with information. So, but I, you know, when they say, what's good for this face shape? I think, I don't know, really. It's more, what will your hair do and what won't it do? And, you know, if somebody's got really thick, curly hair, yeah, and you can't look like Claudia Winkleman, you know, it's going to be a massive difficulty. So I always just look at the hair and then try and find out a bit about the personality. And I would always, always take pictures to the hairdressers. Don't ever feel intimidated by that. Like,
really?
One of the big problems that hairdressers face is not fully understanding what you want. And the best way to break down that is just to show them a picture, like, I want this.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's Jenna Aniston or... It doesn't matter. It just gives the hairdresser an absolute clear picture of, you know, what I love to do is play a very honest, straight game and say, well, look, this is not going to work for you. But this, on the other hand, could be great. You know, let's leave the fringe a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be absolutely kind of music to so many people's ears because I think you're afraid, aren't you, to kind of like be judged that you're, well, I know I don't look like Giselle. Yeah. I know I don't look like Robin Wright Penn, but, you know, this is the haircut that I like. So so thank you for that. And all the other advice. I mean, you've absolutely crammed it in there and given us an indication, if anybody's listening, that you do your kind of private online clinics with your hourly, weekly Instagram Live. So is it Instagram Live you do it?
Yes, Instagram Live at MD London.
Thank you so, so much. Absolutely brilliant. We had so much of your time and expertise, so I really appreciate it. And I'm sure all the Midpoint listeners do as well. Thank you.
That's a pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much to Michael. I absolutely love chatting to him. I loved his tips, his knowledge, his enthusiasm. And how important, actually, nutrition is. But when you think about it, of course the hair is going to be the last place that your nutrition gets to. Solgar, of course, thank you for their support today. The Midpoint is the code you need for 30% off your order, so head to their website now. And thank you to Caroline Hirons as well. I love her story. And actually, her book, which is called Skincare, The New Edit, is out now. It's a gorgeous yellow hardbacked book. It would be a brilliant Christmas gift for anybody from the age of about 18 upwards, I reckon. Anybody's interested in skincare, full stop. And... it turned out, we chatted off our podcast afterwards, it turned out that I used to go into the shop in Space NK in Richmond when she was working there, and we knew so many people in common. She's brilliant, isn't she? And she is welcome back anytime. Thank you to Lauren Armstrong Carter and Rethink Audio for producing, and to you for listening. I'll see you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.